Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Private and charter schools have dominated Pennsylvania high school football and basketball championships in recent years. It comes down to schools that have boundaries, such as traditional brick-and-mortar public schools, and schools that don't have geographic boundaries, such as parochial schools and charter schools. Now, a state legislator wants to separate how those schools compete for championships and also open up how students can transfer and when they can participate in sports. Joining us is Republican State Representative Aaron Berenstein of Beaver County. Representative Berenstein, welcome to the program.
Scott, thanks so much for having me and excited to be here and talk about this.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can also leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Representative Berenstein, what prompted this legislation?
Well, since 1972, when legislation was passed that put both private and public schools together, and remember at that point we didn't really have charter schools. Actually, not that we really didn't have them. They just didn't even exist. I don't even think they were a blip on the radar. So since 1972, the private and public schools have been together as it dealt with championships and playoffs in athletics in high school across the board. 40-ish years, right? Since that time, there have been additional recruiting that's been going on in private schools for athletic purposes that didn't really happen before. So now we're really focused on what are the things that we can do to level the playing field for student athletes across the board. And that's what we did. We reached out to a variety of different people, coaches, athletic directors, teachers, school administrators at both the public and private level. And we got together and we worked on a joint compromise legislation. And this is why we're so excited, because it's supported by both groups of folks.
One thing to add into that 40-year history that you mentioned, something that did change and changed the complexion of the PIAA playoffs was Philadelphia schools being involved. That's only been the last 10 or 15 years. I just add that part to throw it into the history part, but that did add another level of parochial schools being involved, too, with the Philadelphia Catholic League. You represent Beaver and parts of Butler and Lawrence counties. Have there been instances where schools in your district said that they thought the playing field was uneven?
Well, I think if and I know all those superintendents well, developed a great relationship with them and work very, very closely with them. But I'll give you a personal example. In 2003, I went to Union High School. We had 43 students that I graduated with. So think about that, 43, right? It was really easy to run for class president, by the way. You only had to get 20 of your buddies to vote for you, and you were good to go. I did.
Did you win?
We won, yeah.
Okay, where'd you finish in your class?
42nd.
I wonder about that. 42nd. See, I wonder. So that's what you have to do to become a state legislator.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
All right, so go ahead.
I finished almost in the top 50 out of 43 students. So, So we went all the way to the state championship, and then we got beat the tar out of us.
What sport?
Basketball.
Okay.
By Scotland School, which had like 30 kids, right? I mean, and you know what they are. They're all recruited, and it's just a different level of playing field. So this isn't just about me, though, obviously. I've given that up after, 35, so 17 years, I guess, I've been out. But, you know, I talk to these superintendents and we see what happens. And I also talk to the student athletes. I mean, at the end of the day, this is all about the children, right? And I say children, not kids, because here's the important part. Whenever we're going through this stuff and looking at things, you got to protect these. They are little, right? I mean, they're 15, 16, 17-year-old children that we're talking about here. It's all got to be about them.
Okay, but you said that recruiting, like everyone knows this.
Yeah.
But by rule, that wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah. And this is where we get into what we call the transfer rule. And that's the thing that one of the things that we actually eliminated was the transfer rule. And here's why. The transfer rule is something where they say if you move for athletic intent, that you can't play for, depending on the way it's structured, right? You can't play for a year, you can't play playoffs, whatever. Well, two things that we're talking about here. Number one, and I'll give you two specific examples. There's a coach in the Pittsburgh area that literally was recruiting kids on Facebook. They had the documentation of it. Tons of them. Offering them discounts to a basketball camp if they came to a school. Right? I mean, that's like bribery. Okay? That coach got a 2-game suspension. we have players that are going from a school to a different school that are sitting out for an entire year. And I'll give you an example of that. There's a young man that went to Swickley Academy, extremely expensive. I'm sure he got a scholarship there. Okay. He's now going back to his home district where he lives. They're going to challenge him for athletic intent to move to his district where his parents live, away from a charter or away from a private school. He's going to end up sitting out a year. And this is the kind of double standard that we're talking about. And it's not helpful. It's not appropriate in what's been going on. And when you look at what's actually happening is we are holding children responsible for the actions of parents, for the actions of adults. And, you know, if an adult tells you to move, I don't know if you have kids or not. How old are they?
Well, they're in their 30s
now. Okay. When you had a 16-year-old, did they tell you that you were going to move your house?
No.
It's not going to happen. So why, if you decide to move, should your child be held accountable and survive and have punishment for it? And that's really what we've seen go on with that. And I know there are people, well, it's going to make it like the Wild West. Your kid's not going to make a decision on where they're going to go to school. It just doesn't happen like that.
But the point you bring up, that transfer rule is only a year old.
Yeah.
And the Pennsylvania Interscholastic Athletic Association that opposes your legislation, by the way, this seems to be the biggest reason that they oppose it, because they're saying that, you know, it will be the Wild West, that you'll have students that will be transferring just for athletic purposes. And whether it's the parents making the decision or the kids, most likely the parents, it will be happening all the time.
Yeah, so I think a couple things. Would you have moved for your kid would you have sold your home at one place?
No.
Okay.
No, okay.
Right. So we're
but
talking
it's not
about
me, by the way.
No, I think it is, though, right? Because it's about me, too. I have a 4-year-old, and I wouldn't do it, right, when he's old enough. I think my point is most people out there, you can always think of a few bad eggs, right? You can always think of people that are doing things like that. But for the vast majority, what we're talking about here, and you're talking about holding children accountable for what the adults do. And I think we ought not to do that. And the other thing I would share with you is this, is it deals with the PIAA. We invited the PIAA to the table for a meeting. We have documented proof of that. We then sent them our legislation and asked for specific feedback. Both occasions, they told us they weren't interested in meeting and would only do what the legislature said. Okay, we have documented proof of that. The PIAA forfeited their opportunity to be involved in this. They didn't show up to the game. So we're moving forward without them.
And by the way, the PIAA was invited to participate in this program today. After initially agreeing, they said that they had other obligations and that they weren't participating in today's program.
Yeah, and I think here's the example of that. Remember who these people work for. They work for taxpayers, right? They say, no, we work for our members. Well, who are your members? They're school districts. And then guess what? Those school districts are... they're funded by taxpayers, right? So they're funded by taxpayers. Why would you not want to be involved in a conversation? I'll tell you why. It's because they've had 40 years to figure it out, and it's been a colossal failure of their efforts over the last 40 years.
I want to get back to that transfer rule for just a moment. You're talking about selling your house, moving. That's assuming if you're going to another public school district.
Yeah.
Where most of the time that transfers have been an issue is when a student has gone from a public district to a private school, or, you know, mostly parochial schools.
Yeah.
So what's to stop that from happening under eliminating the transfer rule?
Actually, interestingly enough, when you actually look at the data, that's actually not where a vast majority of these things happen, or at least the percentage that you would think. A lot of them is going back from a parochial or a private school to the public school, or from moving from one location to another, from public to public. A lot of people everybody says, oh, private school, private school. The truth is, when you look at the data, that's not actually where the problem lies. And once again, should we really be telling people why you should be going to a different school? I mean, if they're going to pay tuition, that's the rule. That's what we have in Pennsylvania. I don't think you ought to be going after people for their intent. And once again, a lot of times you have students that pop off, right? And I give you an example. There's a young man that ended up moving, okay, from one district to another, and he said, oh, it was for athletic reasons. I moved for athletic reasons. He didn't move for athletic reasons. He just told people that, okay? He moved because his dad got a different job and they moved. Well, guess what happens? He says that, the former school goes after him, and now then the kid had to sit out. So, you know, it's stuff like that that, remember, these are children that say really foolish and stupid things. I mean, I think of the stuff that I did when I was 14, 15, 16 years old. You ought not to be holding them accountable for what adults do.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked a little bit about the transfer rule, but what has gotten the most attention about your legislation is that you're proposing there would be separate playoffs, championships,
yeah,
for private schools and public schools. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. So our legislation, what we would do is this would be separated into public and private, a public and private bracket at the PIAA level, so after district playoffs. Mm-hmm. The reason that we aren't able to do it in district playoffs is the following. It's really impossible because so many of these districts may only have one or two private institutions in them, and then they wouldn't have a playoff system. Okay? So what we were able to do was separate that. There would be two separate brackets at the very end that come together for call it a Super Bowl. And that was at the request of public school folks that they wanted one shot at that private institution. Now, I'll tell you, one of the other things that I think is important is people said, well, it really should be boundary versus non-boundary, with including charters in with privates. And I'll share with you why we weren't able to do that. That was my preference out of the gate. That's what I wanted to happen. But I'm a realist. I know you have a lot of folks that come in here that are in public office. Politicians throw people pie-in-the-sky ideas. I'm sure you sit here and hear them all the time. The truth is, you would have to change the education code in order to change what a charter school is. It is, in fact, a public school. So then we looked at the data and we said, how big of a deal is this? 8 sports are included in our legislation.
Right, and I want to make that point because many people, and I even mentioned this in the introduction, think of football and basketball, the two most high-profile sports, but you're talking 8 sports.
Yeah, so football, baseball, boys and girls basketball, boys and girls soccer, girls volleyball, and softball. And what we did was those are each where there's enough teams to play in a public and private championship. Additionally, what we did was should sports blow up, right, in a positive way, I think lacrosse is on its way, right? I think lax is on its way. That then there would be the opportunity to separate those playoffs. There's only 39 private teams. They would have to have at least 50 public, at least 50 private, and then they would be able to move forward with that. So back to my point real quick on the charter school. Everybody says charter schools dominate. 16.67% of Final Four teams have been charter schools in boys basketball. 4.17% of Final Four teams in football. The other 6 sports combined had 0 charter schools. So it's a feeling that charter schools are dominating. The truth is, when you look at the data, that's actually not necessarily accurate.
But if we're going to use anecdotal evidence, yeah. I mean, there was a school located in the western part of the state, a charter school in basketball this year.
That Lincoln
had,
Park?
Yes. Had recruit. Okay, I said recruits, but had players.
I coach against Lincoln Park. They recruit well.
Yeah. From around the world.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of schools that were very unhappy that they had to compete what they saw as an unlevel playing field because that school had players from around the world.
Yeah.
That's a charter school.
Yeah, so that charter school, by the way, is like a charter school for the arts, right? So I think that everybody was going there to be a great singer. I think that's why they were recruited, right? I say that facetiously for people that aren't able to read that through the microphone, but here's the thing. Are there anomalies? There are. We're not going to sink legislation. We can't get it done legislatively. We're not going to sink legislation over one or two anomalies over an entire system. You got to do what's best for the vast majority of young people. This solves those issues.
Mm-hmm. Can
I add to that?
Sure, go ahead.
And not that it solves them all. I want to be clear. This isn't about solving every single problem, okay? But what I know is in the last 40 years, there's not been a person that has come together to put something reasonable that has an opportunity to pass the legislature. We're the only ones that have been able to do it because we brought people together from a variety of backgrounds.
All right, well, let's address that point. The PIAA, one of the public responses that they've had is that this is an overreach by the legislature, that this should not be handled in by the legislative process. And I'm sure there are people out there listening right now who are saying, why is the legislature dealing with high school sports, playoffs, championships, when there are so many other important issues that you should be and can be and are dealing with?
Yeah, good point. So I'll address the, because I think they're two separate questions. The PIAA says that we shouldn't have to have legislative involvement in this. I agree. This isn't what I woke up and decided, hey, I want to do. I wish the PIAA would have done its job over the last 40 years and fixed the problems. Unfortunately, they've had since 1972 to try to fix it, and they've failed miserably. So when that happens, the legislature does have oversight over the PIAA. If they don't like that, they can separate into their own group and not be the PIAA.
How many co-sponsors do you have, and do you have co-sponsors from both parties?
Yeah, I do. Can I add a little bit more to that? Because
sure.
I know there was a second part of the question. Additionally, the PIAA said that they would not be able to make changes until the 1972 law was addressed. So they came out and they said, hey, we need help. Now all of a sudden, wait, I don't want that help, right? I mean, you can't have it both ways. The other thing I'd say is to people that say, well, geez, don't you guys have other more important things? I mean, listen, I can walk and chew gum at the same time, okay? Like, it's not like this is the only thing that we're doing. We're working on a lot of different legislation. I have a Sunshine Law Act that's going to pass tomorrow out of committee, today or tomorrow. I haven't looked at my calendar. I forget when it is. But, you know, we've passed numerous pieces of legislation. I don't buy the fact of, well, shouldn't you be doing other things? I think you can do them all. You just got to sleep faster.
Let's take a phone call from Ken in New Oxford. Ken, you're on the air.
Yes, I want to say this is long overdue. It's not necessarily the charter schools, it's the Catholic schools. They have predominantly have been ruling Pennsylvania and winning, and they have been able to recruit the best players. So it's obvious that they need to address this to make it a little bit more fair for the rest of the schools.
All right, Kent, thank you very much for your call. I'm sure.
I have a little bit of data on that, too, that I think is interesting. So boys basketball, private schools account for, I'm reading this off of my sheet here. So private schools account for 14.9% of school districts. They have 37.5% in the Final Four. Girls volleyball account for 13.9% of districts, 37.5% in the Final Four. Football, 8.8% of districts, 33.33%. So it's a private school issue. It's not a charter school issue, like Ken said. The feeling is it's charter, boundary and non-boundary. The facts are it's not.
But, you know, something you just mentioned, I understand that you said that you invited the PIAA to participate, but you
right.
invited other groups as well.
We did.
And Pennsylvania Catholic Conference was,
yeah.
was part of that. And they've bought in, correct?
Correct.
Why? Well, if they dominate that way.
Yeah, I think it's because here's the difference. This is not, and this is where I think the PIAA misses the boat. This is not just about sports. This is not, I mean, these are not men and women that we're talking about. These are children that we're talking about. And they've seen kids get zinged over this transfer rule that have both been there, that have transferred to and from them. They don't think it's appropriate, and they think it's ridiculous. And, you know, people can say whatever they want about the Catholic schools and the private schools or whatever. They really care about providing a good, solid education. And they also know that when they're, you know, when there's somebody that moves from, let's say, a Catholic school back to a public school, right? And all of a sudden they can't play there. Now the kid comes back to a private school because he can play sports there, but he has a bad attitude and he's annoyed and he's not a good student, right? It's just, I mean, what we're talking about here is the following. The PIAA and many people that are complaining about the transfer rule are treating these people like they're adults. They're children. We should not be punishing children for the decisions that adults are making on the transfer rule. And, you know, I've gotten feedback from some of the public schools where, oh, it'll make it like the Wild West if we do that, and they'll be recruiting and, you know, doing those types of things. Here's the thing. Do you really want to be the person that steps up and says, I think we should punish this child because their dad, John Doe, decided to move Like, I just think, I think we're better than that in Pennsylvania. I just do.
Mm-hmm. What would this mean money-wise? I mean, would it cost anything more? Would it cost less? What?
I mean, it doesn't look like the cost piece should. I mean, it won't be anything to the state. It won't be anything to the school districts. It'd pretty much be flat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by the way, I'm sure that'll be the next excuse from the folks that decided not show up today.
If PIAA was here, or you did get an opportunity to meet with them, what would you want to say to them?
I would ask them why over the last 40 years, it's been a colossal failure on them trying to fix an issue. And I would say, I'll get out of this tomorrow. I'll drop my bill tomorrow. You guys fix it. The problem is, they have openly said they're not, they move at the speed of molasses. They've openly said that they're not interested in making changes to things, and they make minor modifications and they call it a change.
We have an email that says, particularly in a sport like football, are there any safety issues that anyone has brought up in this process with respect to these big recruit-laden teams pummeling smaller schools?
Yeah, there is. And, you know, I think that's an issue. And I use the example, you know, I played football in high school a little bit, and I look at even these kids today, and I'm like, I don't know if I'd want to go across the middle and lay somebody out on this. I don't think it would look good. Yeah, I think that's an issue. And, you know, that's what some of this, you know, it'll help solve it.
So where does this go from here? Where does this legislation go from here?
So it's in the health committee. I'm sorry. It's in the education committee. Been working very hard with them. We have a great amount of public school support, a great amount of private school support. The public is vastly behind it. I think if you polled them, I've seen some polls online. I mean, it's in the 85-90% that want the separation. I expect this to move through, and then I'll be working very closely with Jay Costa, who's the Democratic minority leader in the Senate.
Who supports this, right?
He does. Yeah. Well, I don't want to speak for him.
Right,
so
right.
In concept, he does. I don't want to speak for him directly, but we've had conversations, and he knows it's an issue, and he'll be somebody that I partner with very well over there. He's a good, honorable man, and I look forward to working with him.
Conceivably, when would this take place if you could get it through the House and Senate and if the governor would approve it?
Yeah, it depends. It's the way the legislation, it says 60 days, so that would be 60 days from the start of the beginning of the next season.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it really just depends on when it passes.
State Representative, Republican State Representative Aaron Bernstein of Beaver County, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, my friend. I appreciate it, and I look forward to doing this again.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We advise you, or encourage you, I should say, to check out upcoming topics for Smart Talk at WITF.org/smarttalk. You can see some of the shows that we're working on, such as a report on Pennsylvania nursing homes, eating disorders, and a Democratic presidential candidate. We invite you to share your questions in advance by sending us a voice memo or leaving voicemail. See what's coming up at WITF.org/smarttalk. Coming back to Smart Talk now, the Senate Transportation Committee has approved a bill that would lift the requirement for annual emissions inspections on vehicles for up to 8 years after the vehicle was manufactured. Joining us on the phone is Senator Kim Ward, chair of the Transportation Committee. She's a Republican from Westmoreland County. Senator Ward, welcome to the program.
Oh, good morning.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. What do you think about eliminating emissions testing here in Pennsylvania? And let's listen to what Senator Ward has to say. Say, Senator, why did you propose this legislation?
Okay, so we have five bills in the package. One bill, SB 72, will lift the requirement for emissions if your vehicle is 8 years or newer. They have enacted this legislation in both California and New Jersey and maybe a few other states, but I use those two states as examples because they're big. They are environmentally progressive, but yet this was accomplished. And they did it, and we would do it, without losing federal funding. because we wouldn't do it without the approval of the EPA. So if we have EPA approval, we won't lose our funding. And I think it makes common sense. If you look at the 25 counties that are required to for annual emissions, to perform annual emissions, you still have a 96% pass rate with half of the cars that are being inspected for these emissions are older than 8 years. So, you know, we're not really, we are in compliance or higher than compliance in many areas throughout those 25 counties with the Clean Air Act, which was enacted, and this was all based on the Clean Air Act of 1990. So here we are almost 30 years later with much more fuel-efficient vehicles. You know, we're making them, forcing them to be more fuel-efficient, but yet the consumer isn't being able to take advantage of that fact.
So when you're saying, when you're pointing out that most and the overwhelming majority of vehicles are in compliance, in other words, they pass the test. I mean, the figure I saw was that like 2% of vehicles that are 8 years or newer actually fail the test. All right, that's one
correct
thing. But there has to be another reason. I mean, do you look at this as being anti-consumer?
I look at it as we are forcing consumers to pay for something that may not be necessary. And we all know we have enough to pay for. And all the consumers want clean air. You know, we all have families. We all live on this planet. But if we're in compliance, there is no reason to continue down this road. This was based on something 30 years ago. And 30 years ago, you know, things were different. We didn't have these fuel efficient vehicles. And I think part of it, too, you know, we were still being put into our industrial past that we have had. So things are different, and consumers should be able to take advantage of that.
You know, I think back to the history of emissions testing in Pennsylvania. Go back 20 years ago during the Ridge administration, when Governor Ridge was in office, that we had this program where we spent millions of dollars, I say we, meaning taxpayers, to build emissions testing facilities. And then that was very unpopular and went away after these facilities were constructed. You still see them about nowadays being used for other purposes. Then, you know, emissions testing, the money that was spent by the garages and the mechanics, all the equipment that they had to buy. Also understand that there may have to be an update for those that provide emissions testing coming soon, correct?
Okay, so PennDOT in 2016 required all of the stations that choose to do emissions, because they're not forced to do emissions, that choose to do emissions, to have this updated equipment by October of this year. And, you know, some of them have already bought this equipment, which is, you know, somewhere around $7,000. Some of them lease it. Some of them haven't done so yet. Senator Vogel has a bill that is in this package that would lift that mandate until we are maybe able to change things or, you know, maybe go back to it. But he has that bill. I think it's important that it gets passed before any other garages are forced to do that if they want to continue to do emissions. So each garage, at least in, I know of the counties that we talked about, there are seven counties that Senator Langerhoek has a bill to remove from the program altogether, because there was a resolution done in 2017 and to look at that and to look at the 25 counties. And those seven counties look like they could come out of the program altogether without affecting air quality. So, you know, we have a lot of bills in the package that do different things. And, you know, I'd love to see this move forward. We did move them out of the Transportation Committee last week, and we're pushing to get a move them all together. It would be a real help to consumers without affecting our air quality.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Senator Kim Ward, Republican from Westmoreland County. She has proposed legislation. Well, as she mentioned, it's one of several bills that have been proposed. This one would eliminate emissions testing of vehicles in Pennsylvania. What do you think? give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Senator Ward, last week when the Transportation Committee voted on this, it was along party lines that it was approved. One of your colleagues, Democrat John Sabatini from Philadelphia, said that one of the reasons they voted against it was, and you've referred to this, that loss of $420 million in federal funds for violating the Federal Clean Air Act. You've also said that if it didn't get EPA approval, that we wouldn't go ahead with it. What makes you believe that we wouldn't lose those federal funds?
Well, because we wouldn't enact it if we did not have the EPA approval. As long as we have EPA approval, we won't lose the federal funds. And that's how we would go about it. We would go through the proper channels because, I mean, gosh, we all know we can't afford to lose any transportation funding here in the state. We're already in a pinch. So we would not do that at a loss of that much money. So that's why the DEP, which is our state environmental department, would go directly to the EPA, which is the national, the federal one, the Environmental Protection Agency, with a revised statewide implementation plan to try to get their approval. And that would be our goal, to get their approval. I'm feeling good that we might be able to do so, being that, for example, last fall, North Carolina, the EPA approved 26 counties were removed from doing emissions at all in North Carolina. So I think that we have a shot here, and we should take our shot. We should do that in defense of something that people are paying for that they may not necessarily need to.
Well, I'm sure that that was discussed in your committee. Why then did the Democrats oppose it?
I don't know. This is the reason they gave. I can't speak for why they opposed it, but hopefully if we bring it to the floor, the EPA and the transportation funding issue will maybe be more clarified at that point. We can gain their support.
And DEP, you mentioned, and you know, we're throwing around a lot of letters here, EPA, Environmental Protection Agency on the federal level, and Department of Environmental Protection here on the state level. DEP has been a critic of the legislation.
Of course. That's okay.
When you say of course, that's okay. What do you mean?
I mean, of course they are, and that's okay. Because, you know, we are looking at this as legislators from a consumer standpoint, that are we paying for something we don't need to pay for? Is that a fact of life? And we believe that it is. And the DEP, they may just not want to make the change. You know, I can't speak for, you know, why they do what they do or why they say what they say. But I think in the end, if we're able to get this legislation passed, the DEP will, they're the EPA, the federal, I'm going to say that for people listening, to the EPA. And if we meet the air quality standards as provided, as required by the EPA, then things will change. If we don't, then things won't change. But we have to take our shot.
Well, and that's, you know, and I can't speak for DEP, but I would assume that the main reason that they would oppose it, okay, you said that they don't like change, but that they're thinking of it for environmental reasons. You're convinced that this would not harm the environment if this testing was eliminated?
Well, it's not going to be eliminated. It's going to be eliminated for 8 years
right,
on newer
okay.
vehicles.
Okay, yeah, I should have clarified.
So,
yeah.
I am confident in that. I'm very confident of that. But if the EPA says, no, it's not, then they won't pass it. I mean, it's kind of black and white. We either meet the criteria or we don't. Mm-hmm. I believe that we do based on the resolution and the testing that has been done just out of those seven counties. I think that, you know, we need to move forward. And everybody wants clean air. I'm with the DEP on that. Everybody wants clean air. But if we have our air, if we're meeting our standards or exceeding our standards, then why are we continuing to do something that was enacted almost 30 years ago? It doesn't hurt to take a second look at many things that were enacted a long time ago. I'm all in on this.
Let's take a call from Mark in York. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, you're welcome.
So I'm curious.
Hi, Mark.
Hi. Let's say I have a car that's 3 years old. What would prevent me from taking the catalytic converters off that car, which are, you know, their emission control equipment? What is there provisions in this bill that would result in fines for tampering with the emissions control equipment?
Yes. In the bill, when your car goes in for inspection, they will be looking for tampering of the emissions. That is in the bill.
Okay, because, you know, the other
if
possibility...
If they have been tampered with.
You take the catalytic converters off and you can, you know, basically clean them out, so to speak, and then reinstall them.
Well, it does call for an inspection of the emissions equipment. But Mark, I don't know why anybody would do that.
Well, I have to admit,
what would be the purpose of a 3-year car taking your emission stuff out? I don't know why anybody would do that.
Mustang or Camaro,
it would still be under warranty. So at that point.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your call. And we were kind of losing Mark there. He mentioned like a high performance car, but you know that's not an easy thing to do, to remove the catalytic converter. The idea behind it would be that you improve performance. So, all right. So, where does the legislation go from here, Senator Ward?
Well, it's out of committee, so we will probably the next move would be most likely running it through appropriations, and then hopefully to a full vote on at the Senate. If that happens and it passes the Senate, it goes to the House Transportation Committee, and the process is, again, they'll have to come out of Transportation Committee. There may be amendments, there may not, and then it would come out of the vote on the full House. And if that happens, it all ends up on the governor's desk for his signing or to let become law or to veto.
All right, let's try to take one more call here. Let's see if
sure.
I can get Lenny on the air. Lenny, are you there? Let's see here. Guess not yet. But Lenny wants to know what can be done if you can visibly see a car that is, belting out smoke that's not in compliance. Well, here we go. Lenny is on the air. Lenny, you on the air now? I guess not. Okay, but what do you do when you see one that is visibly, we've all been behind those vehicles that have a lot of smoke coming out. Well, we say smoke, emissions coming out, dirty air, stink,
right.
All that kind of thing.
Right. Well, what do we do now when we see that?
I don't know.
I mean, are these people going to get their inspections that are running around with their cars billowing smoke up? They may not even have it inspected at this point. But you're not going to have that issue with new vehicles. And even with those vehicles right now who are billowing smoke on the road, we are still at that 96 to 98% pass rate when it comes to our air quality. And I just want to back up a little bit for Mark. Mark, I have a 2013 Mustang GT with a big old 5.0 in it. And I love the car, but I have never thought about taking out the catalytic converters to improve his performance. I think that's a very rare thing.
You have a Mustang with a 5.0. Senator, what are you into, muscle cars or what?
No, I just love the car. Oh. I loved it, and I love driving it. And it's just I just drive it in the summer months, but it's I love it. I love it. I really love Camaros. When I see a Camaro, I go crazy. But I'm so short, I can't see over the front or the back of there because the hood's up high. I love them. I do love them.
We do have a listener comment says by eliminating the emissions test for newer cars, it makes emissions testing seem like a tax on the lower class. I think they're talking about those with lower income. Additionally, if the emissions test is removed from newer cars, more financially successful people can alter their cars without being detected. What do you think about that?
Can do what to their cars?
Well, there's two different questions there. They're saying that it would be a test if it's just newer cars, meaning 8 years or newer. It makes emissions testing seem like a tax on those with lower incomes.
Because their cars will be 8 years or older?
Yes.
Well, okay, so if it's 8 years or older, we also have a bill that makes it every 2 years. But right now, they have to do it every year. Everyone has to do it every year. You know, can the 8 years or older vehicles That's where we get the 96% instead of the 98%. To those, right now they're on the road and they're being tested every year. So now they would be tested every other year.
Mm-hmm. Also,
Those are the vehicles that are, if you're putting out pollution, they're probably coming from the older vehicles.
Also, as part of this package of bills, there would be changes on testing certain models of cars in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh that would just be visual, correct? Gas caps, and the inspector would take a look?
But we're talking about the Stefano bill, that's the 95-96, I believe. Is that the bill you're speaking of?
Yes.
Because they can't find the equipment. They can't find the equipment to inspect them. They're having a hard time. So that changes that.
Senator Kim Ward, Republican from Westmoreland County, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. You have a great day.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We're going to talk about this more in just a moment with someone who opposes this legislation. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. And now we're joined by Joe Manatt, who is Executive Director and Chief Counsel for the Pennsylvania Clean Air Council. Ms. Manatt, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
We're still taking your phone calls, 1-800-729-7532. On Twitter, we're at SmartTalkWITF. So you oppose this legislation. Why?
Well, to put it simply, there is no role for the Pennsylvania legislature in determining the automobile inspection maintenance program. It is a federally mandated program. And there just is simply no role for the legislature to play in tinkering with it.
Well, that sounds like a very legal response to it. But as Senator Ward pointed out, and she mentioned California and New Jersey that did eliminate it and had to get EPA approval. So if, you know, she says that you have to go through EPA, the federal government, whether the Pennsylvania legislature has a role or not, they can enact this, correct, if they get that approval.
They will not get that approval. The program is mandated by the Clean Air Act. It's very clear. Pennsylvania is part of the Ozone Transportation Commission, and it simply cannot be. They would have to change the Clean Air Act. It's not a matter of EPA just approving it or not approving it. It's simply now required by federal law.
But how then did California and New Jersey get theirs changed?
Well, that's a good question, and I cannot answer that. I'm familiar with the Pennsylvania program because my organization has been the one that has litigated it every time the Pennsylvania legislature has chosen to interfere with what is a legal mandate. I cannot speak to California or New Jersey, but I know that in Pennsylvania, this program has been fully litigated, many times over the last 40 years, and at each time it's been litigated, the Clean Air Council has been the victor. I think, frankly, I would advise the senators that if they have a legitimate concern about why this program isn't working for their constituents, they could simply write a letter to the DEP and ask the DEP to ask EPA whether they can be exempt. The answer will be no. Both EPA and DEP testified before this committee. So it seems to me, and I don't mean to sound cynical, as if this is more posturing than it is really trying to get to, a genuine solution.
But, you know, the point that Senator Ward makes, and, you know, and just if we can put it aside, I know we can't under your reasoning, but if you could put aside the legal arguments, the point that she's making that 2% of vehicles 8 years or newer actually fail the tests, but yet there are millions of Pennsylvanians paying an average of $40 per year for this emission testing. Whether it's posturing or not, maybe it sounds like she's trying to look at it from a pro-consumer point of view, too. I mean, that just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. The other point that Senator Ward makes is that, you know, we're talking 1990 Clean Air Act. Isn't it, maybe it is time to take a look at that again?
Well, certainly Congress has looked at the Clean Air Act a number of times and has actually made changes since 1990. It's never inappropriate for the members of the House and the Senate in D.C. to look at what's working and what's not working. The emission inspection program has been a major success. I would say to the senator, the reason that the air quality has improved in her area is probably because of the inspection maintenance program, and therefore it seems counterintuitive to now want to do away with it or to weaken it.
But again, go back to that, and I'm not arguing with you, I'm just going back to that that 2% figure. If only 2% actually fail, then that would seem to say that the vehicles that are being made today are cleaner and are putting out less harmful emissions.
So there is no doubt about it that the senator is correct that newer cars are definitely cleaner than older cars, and they have onboard controls that make it much easier to detect when the pollution control equipment is not working. The failure rate is a little bit complicated to sort of rely on because we don't know the number of cars that routinely get their repairs done, and by the time they get to the official inspection, the repair is already done. So I think the failure rate, could be higher than that if people didn't maintain their cars properly.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a phone call from Bill in Lancaster. Bill, I understand your question is very close to what I was asking, similar about that that failure rate, correct?
Yeah, I think you're dead on. I mean, and first of all, thanks for taking my call. But, you know, we'll never know how many people are getting their cars fixed before they get them inspected, right? But if it's 2%, I mean, it seems like minimally you could crank the time up 4 years or 6 years or whatever it is and not pay the emissions test every year for something that just isn't making any difference.
Mm. Thank you very much for your call. Mr. Minot, what about that?
Yeah.
Because that's part of this is a package, and one of the proposals would be for vehicles older than 8 years that do it every 2 years.
Right. So I think the thing that, at least obviously I come from an environmental health background, all automobiles emit pollution. Carbon monoxide, sulfur, VOCs. And just as you would want to make sure that your car is running as safely as possible, and that's a requirement, you would want to make sure that your car is emitting the least possible pollution. And that's what these inspection programs do, and they've been proven to be very effective.
We only have a minute or so left. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. So what's your next step? We heard what Senator Ward said about, this passed through the Senate Transportation Committee. We'll move on to the full Senate. I'm sure the House will take up the issue as well. I don't know where Governor Wolf stands on it. But from your point of view and your organization's point of view, what's next?
Well, I would humbly suggest to the senator that they drop the legislation. They can simply write a letter to the Secretary of DEP asking them to ask EPA if there's any way that this program can be amended for her constituents. I am, as a lawyer, 100% convinced the answer is no. So I'm not quite sure what she hopes to gain by trying to get legislation passed that will probably be vetoed by the governor and will definitely be challenged successfully in the courts.
Why do you say you think that the governor would veto it?
Because, I can't speak for the governor at all, but it seems to me that when his own DEP has explained why this cannot be legally done, when his own Department of Transportation has explained why this cannot be legally done, and while the EPA has also said why this cannot be legally done, that he would probably veto it. But I can't speak for the governor, no. So that you're quite right to challenge me on that.
Joe Minot is the executive director, chief counsel for the Pennsylvania Clean Air Council. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, there's legislation out there that would set new rules for child marriage.